Are you tired of feeling tired? Do you wish you could turn back the clock on aging? NT-Factor Lipids is the breakthrough supplement that's scientifically proven to repair and renew your body's cells. NT-Factor Lipids are identical to the phospholipids found in your cellular membranes. They've been shown to repair mitochondrial damage, a primary cause of biological aging. In clinical trials, NT-Factor therapy resulted in a 26.8% increase in mitochondrial function, restoring it to levels found in young adults. NT-Factor has also been shown to reduce fatigue by up to 43% and has even been shown to significantly reduce a wide range of symptoms and improve the quality of life in patients with various conditions like chronic fatigue and those undergoing chemotherapy. I've been using NT-Factor for years and prescribe it for my patients. You can find the NT-Factor line of nutritional formulas at your favorite health food store or online retailer. Or, to order direct, call 800-982-9158, 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com. That's ntfactor.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Yay, because for me, this is actually one of my most fun times of the week because I get to have a wonderful colloquy with my good colleague here, Layla Mudin, who's our resident nutritionist. Together, we answer your questions every week. Questions come to questions@drhoffman.net. And how are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, and likewise, yeah, this is good fun. I can't believe where the time goes, honestly.
Yeah. Well, it's always, I think there's an element of randomness because when I do my radio program, when you do your podcast, you know, we pick a topic or a series of topics and we kind of know what we're going to deal with. Although I do get live calls on the show, I do get also recorded calls, but even the recorded calls, you know, I know what's coming. So, with this forum, it's kind of, slate and go when it comes to answering questions. So, before we get to questions, a couple of topics that I wanted to broach, you know, you read a wonderful article on a question that is a pressing question for a lot of people. It's a debate about whether you should drink liquids when you eat. Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had a nice discussion of it in our, newsletter. And we discussed it here on Q&A with Layla. We had a couple of questions about that. But then sometimes, I think about a subject, as I keep pondering it, sometimes new ideas and dimensions to the problem occur to me. So one has to do, and I think I'm sure you're well aware of it, although you didn't cover it in your article. This is a bit of an outlier condition. Mm-hmm. Where there are implications for drinking when you eat, and that is something called dumping syndrome. I'm going to, cue you to tell us a little bit about what dumping syndrome is and what the implications are of having, say, a liquid meal like a shake or guzzling a lot of water with your meal. What could that do, and how could that maybe backfire?
Yeah. Dumping syndrome is something that occurs after you've had some kind of gastrointestinal surgery. And what winds up happening is a short bowel.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people have had that because of cancer, but more often it's due to gastric bypass surgery. So people have it shrinks their stomach and they have kind of a rapid transit. The normal time where things can sit in the stomach is reduced, and there's kind of a pass-through of nutrients more rapidly, right?
Right, because you can only hold so many ounces in your newly small stomach at that point. So it can rapidly go through, and that can kind of wash out through the bowels, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, but it delivers all the calories more quickly. And so these people sometimes, they'll have a sugary meal with a lot of liquid, and they'll break into a sweat. They'll have all kinds of metabolic derangements because their blood sugar shoots up rapidly. And then, you know, what goes up must come down, and then they have reactive hypoglycemia. So that is a use case for avoidance of excess fluids. And if you look at guidelines for people after gastric bypass surgery, it's recommended that they limit their intake of fluids, not, you know, eliminate fluids,
yeah,
but, you know, not have guzzle fluids. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Another element to this is, you know, what about alcohol? And, you know, that alcohol may actually, it stimulates the appetite, you know, so that
it causes a little hypoglycemia to whet the appetite, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it is a something that, you know, they want you to have a drink in a restaurant, A, because, you know, drinks, the margin
is a lot more.
Your table's
not ready. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, just kind of tide you over. But they know that you're going to kind of lose your restraint a little bit on the amount of food that you order. It's a marketing strategy. Drinking a lot of alcohol also can damage the digestive apparatus and damage the microbiome. So that's a case where maybe you don't want to have a lot of alcohol with a meal. But, you know, there's something to be said for the aesthetic enjoyment of, say, you know, glass of red wine with, you know, with a large meal, you know, pairs well with certain foods and so on. White wine with fish and, you know, and so on. Another issue is there is a little bit of a scientific literature on drinking actually can somewhat curb appetite. You know, like a technique, if you're like starving, is, you know, drink a glass of water, you know, but only to a limited extent, because the body processes that signal as, oh, my stomach is full, but it's not a very comprehensive signal to allay appetite. Okay. So, so that's, you know, a little bit of a misnomer, is that, you know, you can't just drink a lot of water and avoid eating. You know, that's maybe a technique that a person with an eating disorder might use, you know.
Exactly.
So, and finally, there's another aspect to this, which is that the body very carefully regulates what's called osmolality, which is the sodium concentration in the blood. And so, you know, many meals contain a fair amount of salt, and you're going to kind of get in trouble if you limit your fluid intake. Your body will ask for fluids when you have a meal with a fairly high salt content, and many meals are fairly high in salt content. So I guess another way to avoid, you know, drinking too much with a meal is avoid very, very salty food. Much of fast food and processed food is very salty, but there's a reason for that. So you'll order like an ultra large, you know, Diet Coke or something like that. You know,
right.
For, you know, for $6 or whatever they charge these days for that. You know, just kind of boosts the bill. Finally, you just want to turn my attention to, there's an article in the Wall Street Journal, which is about the protein craze, just came out today, I think. Basically what they're saying is that it's kind of a fad. All these manufacturers are coming up with high protein, foods. There's like high protein ice cream. There's high protein bread products, you know, protein is a thing. And, you know, we've talked
protein
a lot about protein.
Yeah.
And we talked a lot about protein, and I've written an article about it. We've talked about it here on the program, and, you know, our consensus, you and I, and along with, I think, a lot of very, very, I think, well-respected people in the progressive nutrition community, believe that our current guidelines for protein are set much too low.
True.
So I looked at the article in the Wall Street Journal, and, you know, here's an example where the mainstream media has no idea, you know, what to say, and they consult outside experts. Okay. So in this article, they say around 1 in 5 U.S. adults said they worry they aren't getting enough protein. A survey shows So there's a person who they reach out to for a quote, who is a professor of food science and nutrition at the University of Minnesota. Okay, that's a big deal. You know, she's probably a PhD, you know, from the very least a master's degree. She says the average person gets more than enough protein. She says focusing on protein mostly makes sense for growing kids, the elderly, and bodybuilders. But she says, there's another person they quote here, eating too much protein could cause dehydration and nutrient imbalances. Other expert that they consult recommends a minimum of 54 grams of protein for a 150-pound adult. What say you, 54 grams?
No. No. They've got it all wrong. First of all, if you're getting the right kind of protein, it's very hard to overdo it. Mm-hmm. You're not going to eat 5 pounds of roast beef. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. What you're referring to is something called
self-loading.
It's called protein leverage. There is actually very little in the body that requires carbohydrates. I mean, really, you could go mm-hmm. to a no carbohydrate diet. You're not going to die.
Essential carbohydrate. Yep.
Right. You could go to a very low fat diet, you know, providing you get mm-hmm. the essential fatty acids because it's a fuel. You could not go to a very low protein diet. You're going to die. So the body has these very exquisite mechanisms that actually cause you to acquire the right amount of protein to maintain your bodily functions and your muscle mass and so on, because you will die if you don't get adequate protein. So this theory of protein leverage is your body seeks out foods to satisfy its protein requirements. So mm-hmm. what if you're eating a very low protein diet? Say your diet is like pasta and bread.
What happens then is the body will eat itself. You will find diminishing muscle mass.
Yeah.
You may find eventually diminishing bone, skin. All of that will start to deteriorate because the body will eat itself to get what it needs.
Right. But not only that, but your body is calibrated to be a lean, mean, protein-seeking machine. And you will eat more food to acquire the protein you need. So you may eat a lot of calories to get the protein. And by the way, protein...
A whole lot more pasta
with
its minuscule amount of protein in it
in
an effort to get it. Meanwhile, you get to suffer from carbohydrate toxicity.
Yes. Yeah. All right. So what I did was I looked up the background on this person who has this protein poo-poo, you know, those kind of things. I like to go into a little bit of, you know, sometimes I do a little background on these people.
Sure, sure.
And what I discovered is that she's at the University of Minnesota, and her CV is full of research papers, and she's written an enormous number of publications, but they're all about the benefits of fruits and vegetables. They're all about the benefits of fiber. And then I looked at the underwriting of her Department of Nutrition there at University of Minnesota. And they have something called the Plant Protein Innovation Center. Dedicated to studying plant and alternative proteins. They have 34 members who are underwriting it, basically, mm-hmm. you know, sponsoring it, who include Cargill, General Mills, Archer Daniel Midlands, Conagra, et cetera. So basically all these companies that make wheat and soy and, you know, now plan to make fake meat out of these commodities.
She was captured by these big companies.
I think it's a matter, she may believe in the benefits of a plant-based diet, sure. you know, idealistically, but there is a synergy between kind of an industrial agenda to get Americans to consume more processed food.
Yeah.
And then what's not processed? Beef, pork, poultry, fish, eggs. You know, you can't mess those up. You know,
you can't mess those up.
You can. You can turn you as vice president nominee J.D. Vance said, his favorite treat is a bologna sandwich. He's actually disowned that. But you know, look, he's from Kentucky, so what can you do?
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, enough of that. But I think the article, I don't know, maybe I'll write a letter to the editor of the Wall Street Journal. I have a scant chance of getting it published.
Write it anyway, Dr. Hoffman.
Yeah. All right. It's sort of a, it's the luck of the draw to get your letter pick.
It's worth the while. And then, you know, I remember, I think it was years ago, you had written another letter to the editor that did not get published, but that you presented on Newsletter, and I thought that was just great.
Okay.
Because you've got the Intelligent Medicine platform to do that, and I think that would be a wonderful way to utilize it. You know, these are the things that they're not putting in the paper because that paper has been captured by these corporations and big food and big agriculture and all of that. And,
yeah.
You know,
and by the way,
we're lucky enough to have this platform to do this.
And by the way, the people they consult are from the ADA, you know, the American Dietetics Association. And their platform is all about, you know, high fiber, plant-based diet, you know, where...
The government's my plate.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, I think that's why people turn to Intelligent Medicine, to get a little bit of a perspective, an alternative perspective on some of the legacy media, which parrots the party line all too often when it comes to science, when it comes to medicine and nutrition. Okay, enough of that. So perhaps you know, we could take care of some business before we get to questions. Our sponsors usually get an opportunity to strut their stuff. So let's enable them to share a message with you. Let's hear it.
We all have our golden hour, our time to de-stress and reflect. To reach new levels of calm and contentment, check out Plus CBD's Reserve Collection. It's crafted using the highest quality full-spectrum hemp oil for bigger, broader effects to help you experience deeper relaxation and a brighter mood. As you know, I'm a big proponent of CBD to tonify the endocannabinoid system, which regulates many of our most critical bodily functions, such as learning and memory, emotional processing, sleep, temperature and pain control, and inflammatory and immune responses. CBD is a real breakthrough in herbal products. The CBD brand that I take is Plus CBD from CV Sciences. Their Reserve Collection is a specially curated blend of cannabinoids, rich and bold, when intense support is needed. Enjoy a deeper CBD experience with Plus CBD's Reserve Collection of oils and gummies. To learn more or to order, visit pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman30 for 30% off. That's pluscbdoil.com/Hoffman for Plus CBD's Reserve Collection.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions, questions@drhoffman.net, the place to go.
Well, we've got a nice comment here, a suggestion from Louise, who donates to the American Nutrition Association.
Oh, great. Yeah.
This is important because...
One of my favorite organizations. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Because whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. Now, Louise says, your guest asks about what types of programs the ANA offer. And Louise says, I have one in mind I'd like to mention. A course to educate parents on how to provide good nutrition to their children. This would start with newborns and maybe go on from there. I, for one, know my parents would have provided better nutrition and meals in my family had they known better. Hmm? New moms have no idea about good nutrition for their children. I think this would be a great place to begin and build from there. Your family is the first place you learn your lessons. Love the interview with Corinne Bush. Plus, I donate to the American Nutrition Association.
And thank you very much
for
doing
Louise.
So. And you know, we really appreciate that. What's the, you have the URL for the American Nutrition Association there?
The American Nutrition Association is, go to ANA.org/Hoffman. But this is to get course for, because you could get this vital content to take the course, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition, for just $29. Just go to ANA.org/Hoffman.
Okay.
And so, use the coupon code Hoffman29 to get that discount.
Now, she has another question, but before we tackle her other question, I just want to mention, it's kind of fortuitous that she mentions this to me. It's actually a pretty good idea because I just was appointed to the marketing committee of the American Nutrition Association. There are a lot of subcommittees there, and I thought my experience in media would be helpful. And so
terrific.
I actually think that's a pretty good idea. As we expand our curriculum, that is an idea that is ready for prime time. I think it's important to establish basic nutrition literacy for the public. And a great way to deal with that is I really think that for a lot of people, you know, it's shut the barn door after the horse gets out to try to correct their aberrant metabolisms. And I think it's really key to address nutrition in toddlers and children, even in the preconceptual period, because it really is kind of creates a template for adult food preferences and for metabolism. So that's a great idea. I also had another idea, and I think it's an interesting one, is that I would like to develop a curriculum for health professionals because realistically, let's face it, you know, there are now at least four or five weight loss drugs out there, you know, the injectable drugs and then the oral drug, Wegovy and Ozempic and Mounjaro and a couple of others. It's actually estimated that within the next 5 years, there may be a dozen, and they may be, you know, even more effective. They may address some of the side effects associated with some of these medications. Look, it's inevitable, and we're going to have tens of millions of Americans on them, but I think it's very important.
They're going to want them. Yeah.
It's very important for clinicians to understand that you just can't put people on these medications without some sort of nutritional and lifestyle intervention. Because number one, people go off these medications, then what do you do? How do you prevent them from regaining the weight? Number two, how do you deal with the side effects? And number three, the weight loss is about 25% muscle. And you take an individual over the age of 50 and you diminish their muscle by 25%, that is not a good outcome in terms of overall health. So through proper diet and through exercise, especially resistance training, you can mitigate that. I think we need really courses
getting
in place.
Enough protein.
And that's coming back to that theme because, you know, one of the things that they don't address in that article is, you know, if people are going to eat less, because tens of millions of people will be on these meds, they better eat not just less food, but more protein in the food they eat, because they can't just say, oh, I'm going to have a smaller portion of the pasta that I usually stuff my face with, because they won't get a balanced portfolio of nutrients to support muscle.
You know, Dr. Hoffman, I even advise our clients who are taking some of these meds, even some of my private clients who are on them, I say, you need to make sure if there's any food left over on your plate, it's not your protein portion.
Right.
I don't care that you've left behind the pasta, the potato, whatever you're doing, even the broccoli. I don't mind that you've left it behind. You've got to get that protein in. Of course, don't force feed yourself.
Yeah.
That's never recommended.
Yeah. That's kind of funny because it reminds me of what it's like at the kids' table. You know, kids naturally gravitate towards carbs. And so, but what we always say is eat your protein first and then you can. So it's a constant refrain is because they're growing and their protein requirements are enormous. Being around little kids, it's funny because they're hungry every couple of hours.
Well, you know, if only middle-aged adults and older were that active, right?
You
know, people complain about, well, my metabolism has changed. I'm like, wait a minute. Go chase around an 8-year-old all day long. You'll see what happens to your metabolism. Yeah.
And last time I checked, I didn't grow 2 inches in the past year.
Right. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Oh yeah, the growing and the growing pains and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So she has a question as well.
Yes, she does.
Yeah.
Louise has another question. What type of creams or salves can be used for hyperpigmentation? It's not on the face, this hyperpigmentation. It's on the inner thigh.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So just one comment is that, you know, there are many forms of hyperpigmentation. They can occur with trauma. They can occur with pregnancy. There's a hyperpigmentation of the face, especially that occurs during pregnancy, especially in darker skinned individuals. It's called melasma. And then there's something called, and you're familiar with it, it's actually one of the cool things that you can see on a physical exam that points to the metabolic status of a person. And that is something called acanthosis nigricans. And it typically forms around the neck, under the arms, and it can be the inner thighs. So, I mean, I would have to see this. I would have to ask some questions. I mean, most of our listeners are pretty health conscious and, you know, maybe she's not pre-diabetic, but it is associated with insulin resistance. So that being said, you know, there are a whole lot of things available over the counter because, you know,
salicylic acid.
Salicylic. And then, you know, and I think it's a little bit of a throwback to, you know, earlier times when darker skinned individuals wanted to transform themselves into lighter skinned individuals. You know, so you had, you know, pop stars, who, you know, virtually underwent a transformation from high melanin to low melanin. I can think of one in particular.
Hold on. Dr. Hoffman, wait. Are you talking about Michael Jackson? Because he had vitiligo.
Yeah, well, he had
vitiligo.
He actually had a hypopigmentation disorder where he lost pigment. But then I think vitiligo is kind of random, and it would have been like splotchy, and I think treatments were undertaken with him to make it more uniform, along with a good amount of makeup. But so there are bleaching agents. Some of them are harmful and even dangerous and potentially causing skin cancer. I don't recommend them, but dermatologists can administer that. You know, I would be a little cautious about over-the-counter bleaching agents. You know, I don't necessarily think in this case that natural trumps the prescription or, you know, dermatologist-recommended things for skin darkening, because they do have some agents. The salicylic acid is one of them. I think Retin-A may also fall under that category.
Sure.
So, you know, if this is a concern for you and it's not due to an underlying metabolic problem, you know, see your dermatologist, see what's going on. You know, there are sometimes disease implications for hyperpigmentation, so it might be worthwhile getting checked.
I'm trying to think of the other one that they use in other face creams and things. Is it glycolic acid?
That's a peel. That's like a fruit peel. Yeah.
It's a peel. Right. Well, maybe they're yours. Start with the simple stuff, maybe, Louise, and then, go get a consult.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. We've got a question from Lori. I'm 68 years old and exercise each day. I have hypoglycemia, which I manage.
Okay.
With 3 meals a day and 2 100-calorie snacks a day.
Okay.
After my breakfast of one egg, avocado, and some gluten-free toast, I exercise for 30 minutes. I either lap swim or do the elliptical. But lately, it's been driving my hunger for hours, and I eat a lot, which defeats my weight loss goal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I cut the exercise down to 15 minutes, and it doesn't trigger my appetite.
Yeah.
So what should I eat before exercise so I can continue my 30-minute or more workout routine?
This is the thing. When you are on especially a high-carbohydrate diet, you will you'll be kind of on a treadmill because the exercise burns calories. And, you know, there is some thermodynamic equation going here, you know, like, you know, you drive your car fast and you need more gas for a longer distance. And so people are sometimes chasing their tails in terms of weight loss because they exercise a ton, and then it just stokes their appetite enormously. My suggestion is not to eat before you exercise, because you actually you actually can vitiate the weight loss, calorie burning potential of exercise by eating. It's people have this view that they have to fuel up before exercise, and unless you have a very weak metabolism, you don't need to do that.
I would also suggest to Lori that her hypoglycemia may be caused by her breakfast. I don't mean the egg or the avocado, but that gluten-free toast.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feed your exercise, number one. Do exercise on an empty stomach. Then come home and eat the eggs and avocado and leave it there.
And this is also what I find is that, you know, especially if I exercise a little later, like sometimes, you know, the winter, it's a little colder, so I got to wait till, you know, it's like freezing at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. So I wait till, you know, 8, 9, 10, sun comes out. It's a little warmer. You know, I'm getting hungry by that time. And then I say, well, let me just exercise and, you know, maybe it'll pass. I almost invariably find that the exercise, you know, unless it's like long duration exercise, you know, if like you're going to do a triathlon or something, you need to fuel up. Like the Tour de France bike riders were constantly eating on the move because they were, you know, going 200 miles for 4 hours. But for short bouts of exercise, you know, I find for me, even up to an hour and a half, I'm able to not eat. And then I get back and I'm quite surprised because for about an hour after I get back, I'm not that hungry. I'm just not that hungry because when you exercise, your sympathetic nervous system goes into overdrive and that kind of suppresses the vagal nerve, which is the rest and digest thing. You know, after a little while, I kind of calm down and then I'm very hungry. You know, then I'm really, because it's already, you know, maybe 11, 12 o'clock and I haven't eaten anything. You know, I've fasted all night and I've exercised. Okay, then I'm hungry.
And now your muscles are hungry.
Yeah, it's a muscle hunger. Yes. Yeah. It is muscle hunger.
More protein.
Yep.
Right. Lori, don't eat before you exercise. Go do your exercise, come home, have a good meal. And that should kind of take care of the problem. People think they have to feed hypoglycemia.
Yeah. Yeah, and
because many people still believe, Dr. Hoffman, that low blood sugar is the opposite of diabetes. It's actually not.
Yeah.
It's a pre diabetes in that hypoglycemia, aka low blood sugar, is unstable blood sugar. That instability in blood sugar is really the precursor that if you continue eating in that way, you can become diabetic because it's too much carbohydrate that's causing the problem.
And I think also people who have hypoglycemia, they become a little phobic. And when they become phobic, they say, oh my goodness, I have to, you know, take a little food.
I'm going to pass out.
You know, I'm going to get jittery. Try to wean yourself from it and train yourself to go longer periods of time without food. That's the body's natural state.
Intermittent fasting.
Yep. The body's natural state is in ketosis. You don't... You know, ketosis, you maintain your blood sugar quite nicely, but you switch to a fat burning mode.
And the hypoglycemia is gone.
Yeah.
Even consider, do an intermittent fast, don't eat for 16 hours, you know, from dinner the night before. I would even go so far as to say, fast for an entire day.
Yeah.
Fast for 24 hours. Drink water, that's fine. You could drink some bone broth, maybe, some nice seasoned broth, but with salt. Not something out of a can or a seasoning packet or some other thing that might have MSG in it or something. I'm talking about the real thing. And let your body just be in ketosis.
Yeah. And you will eventually, you can, it may be hard at first and pretty uncomfortable, but you can actually train your body. You'll train your body to.
Right. I mean, I think everyone's experience, say you're at work, you've been very, very busy. You didn't have time to eat lunch. You were really hungry, but now that you're too busy to eat. So then after maybe an hour, 2 hours goes by, you're not hungry anymore. What happens?
Yep. This too shall pass.
That's the beautiful gift.
This
and
too
the
shall
trick
pass. Yep.
That happens. You're not hungry anymore.
Yep.
Your body's kicked into a nice fat burning metabolism. Everything is fine.
Right.
You're ready to go hunt for food now.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how we survived millennia.
Yeah.
You know, deprivation and the need to, you know, not have hot and cold running food. Anyway.
Yes.
So good point at which to divide our podcast because.
Oh my goodness.
Know, we do it in two parts. So give us a preview of what we're going to tackle in two parts in part two.
Okay. In part two, Janet asks, what do you think of red yeast rice? My husband's taking it. Is there one that doesn't contain statin?
Okay, great question. When we return, we'll tackle that and other questions. Just a reminder that Dr. Hoffman's store is a place where you can get the supplements that we often talk about here on Intelligent Medicine. Fast, safe, reliable. That's where I get my supplements. That's where Layla gets her supplements. It's a great way to shop and to get prompt delivery. So I think I have a package downstairs, like in my building. After this, I'm going to go downstairs and see what goodies have arrived. Okay. When we return, more of our weekly Q&A with Layla and Dr. Ronald Hoffman.